So we're going to read from John chapter 20, verses 24 to 31. John chapter 20, verses 24 to 31. Now Thomas, also known as Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." A week later, his disciples were in the house again and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." And Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, that by believing you may have life in his name. Thomas gets a bit of a pasting over Easter, doesn't he? He's given a nickname, Doubting Thomas, which I think is really unfair. I try and make it a general rule: try not to say anything bad about someone you might meet in heaven afterwards. And I don't know about you, I would hate to be judged on a few events in my life. It's not fair, is it? But still preachers judge Thomas on those few events, a few words that he said. And it's not really fair at all. So let's just sort of divide this very quickly into three parts. We've done the story with the children. First is, I said, going with Jesus. When Jesus announced that he was going to go up to Jerusalem, back in John chapter 11, the disciples said, "Teacher, a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back." What does Thomas say? I love what Thomas says. He says, he's a bit of a pessimist. He said, "All right, let us also go that we may die with him." That's pretty courageous, I think. I think it shows he doesn't deserve the bad press he gets. One commentator says that there's a sense of Jewishness about this. Apparently, in a Jewish wedding, they will say, "Now we're all married." In other words, they're all involved in the wedding. And there's a sense in which Thomas says, "Well, you know, if Jesus dies, then we'll all die with him. We're one with Jesus. And for the rest of our lives, we are tied to Jesus. So whatever befalls Jesus, befalls us as well." Somebody called him a courageous pessimist. And I could relate to that. Many, many years ago, I was preaching, and we are going back here over 50 years. I was preaching in a small church in the valleys. I preached really badly. It was a dreadful sermon, but they were very kind. And so one young lady came to see me. Name I didn't know at the time was Margaret Morgan. I didn't know it at the time. And she said, "You know, I was talking about following Jesus wherever you go." And she said, "It's strange you say that because God called me to Thailand. And that's where I work. I'm just home on furlough and I'm going back to Thailand. So I wish to God's blessing we parted and I never saw her again." Because she returned to Thailand and she was captured by extremist rebels and killed. Margaret Morgan, I discovered many years later that was her name. I saw a picture of her. I said, "I know that woman." I realised who it was. So there's a sense, you know, in which, I mean, incidentally, about 2 years after that, God called me to Brazil. So there's this sense in which Jesus calls you and you go with Jesus. Now, it might be to an early death like Margaret, or it might be to a 50 years of ministry like it happened to me. But you go where Jesus calls you. One of my students absolutely made me collapse laughing. I used to teach Bible questions. I was preparing, part of the team, preparing pastors to take on the churches that were being planted. We were planting lots of churches, so we needed lots of young people to be trained for the ministry. And I was also involved with the university students, and because when the Christian Union at the uni discovered that I had a degree in physics, they said, well, would you come and do some talks about science and religion, because a lot of people think you can't be a Christian and do science. And so, in a moment of madness, they dreamed up a four-part evangelistic series about finding God in science. And I'd never heard of an evangelistic series done based on science and religion. Never heard anyone trying that one before. But we did it. And a fantastic success, actually. A packed room was packed and people were great. And we did hear about one of the lecturers from the science department who actually committed his life to Jesus at the end of that, because he realised he could. But then there was a private university in town, and they had a... it's Christian, belonged to them. They had a group. Once a week, they had like a sort of moral or religious or that kind of a lecture with an external speaker. And this group were known to be really bolshy. And they were known for tearing the speaker apart and being really, really difficult. And this student said, wouldn't it be a good idea to send Peter in there to talk about religion and science? I said, yeah, no problem at all. So it was on one of the nights when we had classes. So I said to my students, well, do you want to come with me? And they knew that this group was renowned for giving a rough reception to its visitors. And would you like to come with me? And Antonio, who went on to become a pastor, Antonio said, oh, right, let's go with Peter and die with him. Quoting Thomas. That absolutely cracked me up. And of course, it was a huge success. And, the group were great and relating well. And at the end of the talk, they actually burst into spontaneous applause, which they'd never done before. My students were sat back sweating all the way through. Whoa, wait a minute, Jesus is here. Of course he's here. So we go with Jesus. And then Thomas ends up kind of looking for Jesus. And there are moments in our lives when doubts assail us and we worry and we feel, we've done something wrong. And we have doubts. I love the Billy Graham campaign that years and years ago that had was announcing the talks, and then it had the subtitle, Come and Bring Your Doubts. Isn't that brilliant? Come and bring your doubts. That's what we say to people. We used to run the Alpha course in Penrith. So I used to announce it every Sunday to Sunday. I used to say to people, come and bring your doubts. And it's okay to have doubts. Okay. Thomas was a bit stubborn, wasn't he? A bit stubborn, let's be honest. And Tom Houston said he indulged in solitude. He indulged in solitude. Instead of facing it directly and looking, he kind of withdrew into his shell. That wasn't so good. But he worked it through. In our Alpha course in Penrith years ago, we had a great team. I just used to wash the dishes, actually. Because the team had it covered. There was no point in my being there. They were doing it great. But there was one particular group. They had divided into groups. And the idea is you just talk. You just talk openly. There's no pressure put on people. Just talk about the subject of the day, which has been brought up in the talk. There was a group of young students. We called them the three psychologists, because they were all psychology students. And they were full of doubts. And this team, we had this group leading the group, a few people leading the group. And they were terrified of these students, and because he's super intelligent, and asking questions after questions. In there, said Peter, "Would you come and sit in our group, please? Please come and sit in our group because we're terrified of these kids, you know." So I said, "Yeah, okay." So I went in. I sat in the group. I hardly opened my mouth because the team had it covered, you know. And whenever questions came up, they'd say, "Well, yeah, I hear. The way I see it is this," and they just kind of explain their faith to the students. And the students said, "Oh, yeah, yeah." And so at the end of the session, I said to the team, "Look, guys. You've got it covered. You don't need me. You're playing a blinder. You're just telling people about Jesus is all you have to do. It's up to them whether they believe or not." And at the end, you'll be pleased to know the three psychologists believed. And in fact, a couple of them used to come back on holiday to Penrallt in the summer just to visit the church. They were now members of a church down in the South India. So yeah, Thomas has his doubts, but. He overcame them. And I have going with Jesus, looking for Jesus at times when we're struggling, and then triumphing with Jesus. Because he triumphed with Jesus. He disappears from the Bible at this point, more or less. Which is a shame, because I just totally believe in Thomas. This guy had real courage. This guy had a real missionary spirit, I think. We don't know for sure what happened to him. Now, the church in India, in Goa, claims that their church was founded by Thomas. We have no physical proof of that. But it's possible, because twice a year, commercial ships used to sail from the Gulf of Aqaba in Israel down to India. So Thomas could easily have hopped on board one of those ships and ended up in India. So it's not impossible, but we don't know. But Jesus says this, "Lo, I am with you to the end of the age." Lo, I am with you to the end of the age. Jesus is only a heartbeat away. One day my heart, your heart will stop beating, and the next second we'll be with Jesus in eternity. He's that close. Jesus is only a prayer away. He says, "Whatever you pray in my name, God will hear and do." Jesus is only a prayer away. And there have been many a time in my life when I have prayed. And simply, sometimes my prayer has been, "Jesus, help me." That's a fair prayer. That's a fair prayer. I can tell you from experience, it works. Jesus is only a prayer away. Jesus is only a meeting away. Okay? Jesus is only a meeting away. Okay, the bottle's gone in. Everything's fine. Jesus is only a meeting away. He says, "Wherever two or three are gathered in my name, there I am in the midst." It's only a meeting away. He's only a face away. He says, "Whatever you do to help the stranger, you do to me." So we meet Jesus when we help a stranger. Jesus is that close. That right through our life, there is not a moment in our life when Jesus is a long way from us at all. He's right there, close to us. And he's alive. When I was a Bible college student myself, we were sent to a small, to a quite a large housing estate on the outskirts of London, and we had a special meeting on the Wednesday in somebody's living room to explain the Christian faith, and it was my job to lead that meeting. I was still learning, I wasn't ordained yet, I was still, whoa, this is all new to me. And so we had a group, we were talking about the resurrection, about life after death, and we were talking, and this guy, we talk about life after death, because he said, "No one's ever come back, so we don't know what it's like, do we?" And I said, "Actually, strange you should say that, because somebody did come back, because his name is Jesus." So I said, in answer to your doubts, Jesus came back to take us with him when he goes. So we can be sure this life after death because Jesus rose from the dead. And we can be sure we'll experience that life after death if we hold on close to Jesus, because he'll take us there. The conversation ended there. Believe me, I never saw him again. I don't know what happened. But the truth stands. Jesus is alive.